All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Veterans Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in and listening. We've got a really great program today. We're going to be talking with a gentleman who has an organization about horses and heroes. And I think that's pretty cool. His name is Jerry Paulson, and the organization is Operation Horses and Heroes. He's going to be on in first half of the program. And in the second half of the program, we've got a really compelling story about a veteran from Iraq who was blown up by a mortar and lost his sight, and he wrote a really great book about, it's called Fascinating Blind, or Fighting Blind, Green Beret Story of Extraordinary Courage. It's Ivan Castro, and he's on an airplane now. Hopefully he will be landing in time for us to get the interview at the bottom of the hour. So make sure you stick around for that. A couple of announcements, though, that are really important, of course. Starting tonight is Ken Burns' documentary of the Vietnam War. Ken Burns has done a lot of great documentaries in the past. This one, I think, is going to be a real challenge for him. The premieres tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central Time. You might want to check your local PBS station to see when and where it's going to be on, and it's probably going to be on more than once tonight, or set your DVRs for this. Just reading a little PR piece that we got from them, it says, in an immense and immersive narrative, Ken Burns and Lynn Novick tell the epic story of the Vietnam War as it has never been told before on film. The Vietnam War features testimony from nearly 80 witnesses, including many Americans who fought in the war and others who opposed it, as well as Vietnamese combatants and civilians from both the winning and losing sides. I think it's, as I mentioned before, this is going to be a really compelling program to watch, and it's probably going to be pretty politically charged. So maybe you can let us know what you think about Ken Burns' story of the Vietnam War. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook. You can send us emails at Veterans Radio. Go to our website, veteransradio.net. Click on the contact button, and you'll be able to leave us a message. And next week, we'll report back to see how you feel about this. We are hoping to get Ken Burns or somebody from his organization on the program today, but you can understand they're probably a little busy. So hopefully we'll get him on in the next couple of weeks, because this is, I believe, it's a 10-week program. So, again, tune in tonight, 8 o'clock, PBS, Vietnam War. Should be interesting. Love to hear what you think about it. And also coming up this week, actually quickly tomorrow, here in the Ann Arbor area, we've got a couple of things that are going on all in the same day. Representative Debbie Dingell and Tim Wahlberg are going to be teaming up to co-host a Veterans Resource Fair in Town Hall in Washtenaw County. So the first part of it takes place at 10 o'clock tomorrow, that's Monday, September 18th, at the VFW Post 423, and that's located at 3230 South Wagner Road, just outside of Ann Arbor. And this one is going to, it has a bunch of veteran employment specialists, veterans affairs counselors, veteran service organizations are expected to participate. And Congresswoman Dingell and Congressman Wahlberg are expected to speak at around 10:30. So again, that's tomorrow, Monday, September 18th at VFW Post 423 between 10 and noon. And that's to provide a job, hopefully it'll be a job fair, resource fair, it says. And the town hall is going to take place later in the day from 5:30 till 7:30, Monday evening, September 18th, inside the Morris Lawrence Building at Washtenaw Community College. And Washtenaw Community College is located at 4800 East Huron River Drive, just east of Ann Arbor. So you're going to be going from the west side of the county to the east side of the county. And at the town hall meeting, again, the congressmen are expected to join the Veterans Community Action Team and the Washington Department of Veterans Affairs for a town hall conversation on veterans' health care benefits and other issues. The event is intended to provide an opportunity for veterans and military families to ask questions and receive information about the benefits and services available to them. Some of the organizations that are going to be responding at both functions tomorrow are going to be the American Legion, the Buddy to Buddy program, the Dearborn Vet Center, Department of Labor, Disabled Veterans Outreach, Eisenhower Center, Fallen Heroes Foundation, Habitat for Humanity, Huron Valley, Livingston County Veterans Service, Michigan Works, Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency, National Guard Family Assistance Center, Operation Military Resources, the VA from Detroit and Ann Arbor, the VA Loan Guarantee Division, and the Washtenaw County Veterans Affairs. Boy, if you want to find out what's going on with your benefits, with the VA and your health care and so forth, this looks like a place that you should be tomorrow, either at VFW 423 on South Wagner Road or at Washtenaw Community College, the Morris Lawrence Building, in the evening from 5:30 to 7:30. So I hope to see you there. I know I will be, and I'm sure that there will be many other local veterans. Good opportunity to find out what's going on. We got to keep going and keep pushing and keep pushing, make sure these people live up to their promises to their veterans. So we're going to come back in just a moment with our first guest, and that's Jerry Paulson, and he is with the program that's called Operation Horses and Heroes. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Veterans Radio, and joining me on the line right now is our first guest, and that is Jerry Paulson. And Jerry has started an unusual organization called Operation Horses and Heroes. Jerry is a veteran. He owns a number of veteran-owned, as they call, veteran-owned businesses. And so, Jerry, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, Dale. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. So tell me a little bit about your background with the military, and then let's talk a little bit about Operation Horses and Heroes.
Army, NCO, did the 11 Bravo thing, infantry, did the recruiting thing, and ended up with 12th Special Forces Group before I finally got out. And now I've got a part-time assignment as the chairman for the Chicago Recruiting Command's Military and Veteran Resource Group.
Wow.
So all together, from the time I went in until now, at some time of my life between my active time, reserve time, guard time, and now my civilian time, about 40 years spending time with the Army.
Congratulations on doing that. I barely lasted a little over 3.5 years.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. So tell me about this organization, Horses and Heroes, Operation Horses and Heroes.
We are a 501c3 not-for-profit. We've been in business now and running for about 3.5, 4 years. Started here in Illinois, and we've expanded. And we are a multi-day equestrian resiliency therapy program to help all of our veterans and our active duty with whatever the it is that they're struggling with, whether it's PTSD, TBI, prosthetics, emotional challenges, social challenges, reintegration, whatever it is that they're dealing with. This program has been designed and put together to try to help them not only try to figure it out, try to get a better balance with their lives, but help them understand what they're going through and realize, hey, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. Because all the other veterans and active duty that are in the program, you can always know that there's somebody else that is probably having some of the same issues and struggles that you are.
I think that's a very important point that you bring up there, Jerry, about the idea that you are not alone. And, you know, so many veterans, unfortunately, feel that they're the only ones that have whatever it is, as you mentioned. And I think they would be surprised to find out how many other men and women are going through some of the same things that they are. And it's always helpful to talk them out with somebody who really understands.
Absolutely. It's amazing, too, because our program, the way when I came up with the curriculum and came up with it with my vice president, who's also a veteran, Air Force veteran, and we're not about fixing it. We're about identifying it, letting them know they're not alone, and help them find a way through it. But what sets us apart is that our program is a non-writing program. So over the course of the 3 days, I'll use the word participants because it's veteran and active duty. They will never get on a horse. But in that 3 days, they'll spend over 20 hours with the horses doing different evolutions to help them identify different things that will bring out the issues that they can all share together with our lead clinician who's also a combat veteran, and she has her PhD in mental health and is equestrian certified.
Goodness. What is it about horses that makes people feel more comfortable?
If you've not been around them, it's hard to explain, but the power of the horse is pretty mighty and pretty unique. Similar to a dog, I think, in a sense. I'm not a dog guy, but they certainly know, understand what you're going through, and they can tell when someone's having a bad day. They can tell when something's not right. And when you've got that size of an animal around you and they give you that friendly little nudge that, hey, it's going to be all right, it's pretty powerful.
That's true. Are you affiliated at all with the VA hospital in northern Chicago?
We are not affiliated with any of the VAs at this point, not yet. But we do advertise, obviously, and encourage any veteran, regardless of when they served, to get a hold of us to be in a program. The other thing that we do, and I found this out through some other friends, that a lot of programs don't do, is we don't care if you've got a good discharge, a bad conduct discharge, a dishonorable discharge. The mere fact that you served and you're having an issue, we welcome you with open arms.
That's great. I mean, you know, some of these people were given bad discharges or whatever you want to call it because they had issues already. And sometimes being in the military just kind of exacerbated them, I think.
That's true. And as you know, if you have a bad conduct or a dishonorable discharge, you are not going to get services from the VA.
That is correct. So tell me about, give me a little idea of the typical day or the curriculum that these veterans go through when they come up to your organization and say, okay, I need some help.
Sure. We start our days with breakfast at 7 o'clock. 0700 is breakfast. After breakfast, they spend time grooming horses. They each get assigned a horse, and that's, quote, their horse now for the next 3 days. So they'll spend time grooming, maintaining the horse, cleaning the stall, feeding, watering. That's their horse to take care of. After that little bit of time, that 30, 45 minutes is taken care of, then as a group, they will work with our clinicians until lunch. After lunch, they'll go back and they'll do more evolutions with the horses. And then about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we'll take a break. And then as a group, they will do a project that has been selected for them at the host facility as a way to pay it forward. So, for example, we have one of the programs, the facility needed some fence put up. So in the 3 days, the group of veterans in active duty, they put up about 1,500 feet of fence for this facility. At another facility, they needed one of the barn inside tack rooms where all the equipment is kept. They needed that stained and painted. The group did that. So at every facility, there is a project that the group will do over the course of the 3 days as a way to say thank you and help pay it forward to the host facility.
That's great. I'm looking at your website right now, and for our audience, it's operationhorsesandheroes.org, and it gives a lot of great information here about the news and some pictures of the dogs, and it's got some great testimonials here. I was going to start to read one, but they're just too gushy. They really love what you folks are doing out there. And, you know, I don't want everybody to start tearing up as we talk about how these things can help so much. I noticed that you do have an event coming up in Ohio in the next weekend, I believe it was, or sometime soon.
Yes, next weekend, as a matter of fact. We'll be in Chardon, Ohio, at a facility called Hamden Hills Stables. This has become a very unique and special relationship to Operation Horses and Heroes because the couple that own the facility are also Gold Star parents.
Oh, my. All right.
So they have partnered with us, and they are doing it in honor of their son who gave his life for our country about 8 years ago.
And where is this being held again? I didn't recognize the name of the town.
It's going to be in Chardon, 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 Ohio, which is about an hour east of Cleveland.
Oh, okay. All right. And that runs which days? Next Saturday and
next
Sunday?
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay, and if they wanted, if the people that are listening in Ohio wanted to go to this, who would they contact, you, or is there some other place they
yep.
could go?
They can contact myself. They can just call. My phone number is area code 847-529-5205, or just send me an email through our website, and it'll get right to us. And we are full. We've got 11 veterans in active duty in this particular program. But anybody is more than welcome to come out to talk to any of myself and my cadre and see what we're all about. We have had an amazing, amazing amount of support again this year from the community who, because we are a not-for-profit, and we all know how those kinds of operations work, Dale.
Right.
All the meals are provided by the community.
That's,
which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think that most, you know, when people find out about these groups like yours and others that are in their towns and localities, that they do usually step up and help out.
They do.
With
whatever,
they do.
The VFWs have stepped up. The American mm-hmm. Legion step up. There's a local resort that has discounted the rooms for all of our veterans coming in from out of town and our volunteers from out of town. The rooms are normally about 150 to 200 a night. And they're giving them to anybody involved in our program for $50 a night.
Wow. That's great.
We've got a local a law firm who had made a donation. We've got a band coming in who's donating just to provide some entertainment for us on Saturday night. A local landscaping company is coming in, and they're donating a 30 by 30 tent for us to be under for all, everybody. And the list goes on and on. And everywhere we go, we do get this type of support. Next year, we're going to be in the Lansing area with one of our programs.
Oh, all right. Well, let us know about that one. That one we might be able to get up to and go to.
Absolutely. It's right in your backyard. We'd love to do it.
That would be fun.
We were fortunate enough to be chosen as the charity of choice this year for Michigan State University's Rodeo Stampede. So we were up there for 5 days for that as well. So we got a nice footprint up there, made some great connections and great friends. And one of the individuals who helps run the Michigan State University rodeo team has asked us to come up and do a program there. So we definitely will do that next year.
I think that's terrific. There, I'm looking over some of the information that Susan sent me, your executive assistant, I'm assuming.
Yep.
But she was saying, you know, how people could help out. We were talking with Jerry Paulson here, with runs an organization called Operation Horses and Heroes, and it provides an opportunity for veterans who are disabled in one way or another to work with horses, which is kind of neat. You know, you don't get to ride the horses, you just get to work with the horses, because horses seem to have an inner sense that they know when people are hurting, and they do whatever they can to make you feel better. I think that's really neat.
Yeah, it's really great. The other thing that sets us apart is we also include family members.
Mm-hmm.
So the family members, the spouse, or if they have a caregiver, they are more than welcome to be there as well. And all the meals for all 3 days are provided for everybody because of the community support.
Mm-hmm. Well, how can we help out? I'm going through your list. So you can help veterans, because that's free. We know that part. But we're always looking for funding. You're looking for volunteers,
volunteers,
business owners.
Funding. If anybody would like to do a fundraiser with us, we've done several fundraisers. We're partnered with the Chicago Bulls for a fundraiser. We partnered with a local camera club in Illinois. We've partnered with a polo club in Iowa. They did a fundraiser for us this year, and they're going to do one next year for us already. Fundraisers, obviously, is a good way for community partnership and to help all of our veterans active duty and their families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just looking at the one of your points that it says, business owners, think about all the money that you spend on golf outings, entertaining clients, and social events. You should be able to do all those things, but help the brave men and women who have served and are still serving. It's a great line.
Yep. Thank you. Yeah. You know, as I told a very dear friend of mine, CEO, I said, you know, you spend $5,000 a year on playing golf, and you're not even good at it, but why don't you turn around and support one of our veterans to go through the program? And he did.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Tell me about the other things that you are involved in, can you?
Sure. As a veteran-owned business, I own my businesses 100%. I've got a communication and presentation skills company, and we have offices in the Chicago area, Sao Paulo, Brazil, Hangzhou, China, and in Guam. And then I have the only company in the world that takes businesses of any size to Guam for 6-day business discovery and networking trips in support of the largest military buildup since World War II, with our government now spending over $9 billion to relocate the 3rd Marine Division from Okinawa and relocate that entire division to Guam.
I didn't even know that was happening.
Yeah, so in a nutshell, they're building a brand new Marine Corps base for the Marines in Guam, and of that 8,000 that are with the 3rd Marine Division, 5,000 of them will be permanently assigned to Guam. The other 3,000 will be on 6-month TDYs and rotational deployments.
Wow. So all of these things are going to be contracted out, and what are they looking for mostly?
As the governor of Guam said publicly, and it's I'll pretty much quote what he said, Guam has experts in every field, but we don't have nearly enough in any field because of the size of this buildup.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much opportunity for veteran-owned businesses and service-disabled veteran-owned businesses and small businesses. I'm getting requests every week for more businesses that they're looking for more types of businesses to get the subcontracts from the larger firms so that they can get the work done. And we've done, since I started that business in 2009, we've done 19 groups of businesses that we have taken on these 6-day trips to Guam. And many of them not only have gotten business, but they've set up businesses in Guam.
Wow.
Which, it's still part of the United States.
That's true. Another part we don't normally talk about. And so they're looking for a lot of veteran-owned businesses to fill these contracting jobs, correct?
To fill the requirements. Yeah, I'll give you a quick example. A friend of mine lives in Guam. He owns an office supply company.
Mm-hmm.
He was awarded the $5 million painting contract at the Air Force Base. Now, how does a guy get that when he sells office furniture? It was set aside just for veterans, but he partnered with 5 other veteran-owned painters here in the United States mainland. He just was the overseer of the contract. So he got the contract. All the work went to his 5 veteran-owned small business painter buddies.
Mm-hmm.
They did the work.
It sounds
but
like
on paper, it looks like he got it.
I think that sounds like one of those things. Can you do that job? Sure, I can do it.
Exactly.
Wow.
So there's an amazing amount of opportunity over there. We schedule trips year-round for businesses. We give veteran business owners a discount on the cost of the trip to go with us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 6 days in Guam. And we get you in front of all the key decision makers, all the people of political influence and other business influence. And on an average 5 days, you'll have anywhere from 8 to 14 meetings during those 5 days that my staff and I have arranged just for you to sit down in small groups and go one-on-one with the business leaders, decision makers, and senior people of influence who are all doing things related to the buildup.
Wow. I don't know if we're breaking news here or not, but it's this I had not even heard about yet, that they were going to be leaving Okinawa for Guam and moving all of the Marines off of Okinawa. Is that right?
That is correct. And the entire air wing that's currently over in Futenma, Japan, is also being relocated. So they're getting rid of that, too. And that's going to be relocated to Guam and other parts, too. They're even adding new runways to Anderson Air Force Base just for the Marine Corps aircraft.
Wow, I didn't think Guam was that big.
Well, it's not, but it's the largest island in all of Micronesia. The two interesting things for veterans, though, is there are more veterans per capita in Guam than anywhere else on U.S. soil. And every single family that's indigenous, every Chamorro local family on Guam has had or currently has someone serving in the United States military.
Wow. Huh. Who would have thunk that one?
Yeah, there's over 14,000 veterans who live on Guam.
All right. Well, it sounds like a great idea. And we got about 2 minutes to go. What else would you like to say about what's going on with Jerry Paulson and all your different organizations?
No, I just want to thank you, Dale, for what you're doing and for getting the word out, keeping all of us veterans informed with your show. And you know, I appreciate everything you're doing. When I get up that area, we'll definitely have to get together and make up some more stories.
I think so. Also, I reading your bio that you do either a radio or a TV show in Chicago.
Yep, have a TV show with a friend, Honoring Veterans First. We tape, and we're on the local cable channel here. Mm-hmm. It's all about veterans and for veterans. And we talk a lot about business stuff, too, but we try to highlight some different veteran business owners or different veteran organizations during the show as well.
Sounds like we need to get together and have a chat.
Absolutely. We'd love to. We'd love to.
All right, Jerry. Thank you very much. We've been talking with Jerry Paulson here from the organization is Operation Horses and Heroes. You can go to their website, which is operationhorsesandheroes.org, or you can follow them on Facebook or on Twitter and probably any of the other forms of social media out there. Again, Jerry, I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Dale. Have a great day, and thank you for your service.
Thank you. All righty. All right. I see we've made contact with our next guest, so I'm excited about that. So we're going to be taking a quick break here for the news. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Ivan Castro. He's the author of Fighting Blind, a truly great story of a Green Beret of extraordinary courage who was blinded in Iraq and how he has managed to keep going. Just keep going. I think it's just great. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after the news. You're listening to Veterans Radio. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and joining me on the line right now is Captain Ivan Castro. Ivan is in the United States Army, and Ivan, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good afternoon, Dale. How are you?
I'm terrific. Thank you so much for being on the program. I know you've been flying all over the country. And
I have. I just touched down right now. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting at the airport.
Well, thank you for giving us this time. I just think it's so important to get your story out. I know it has been out for a while, but maybe our audience doesn't know about it, and it's something that they should. So I know that you were in Dayton this weekend. Did you run another full marathon?
I did. I was. It was an honor to have been invited to the Air Force Marathon as they celebrate their 70th anniversary as a force. And wow, what a celebration. You know, I can tell you that everybody came out in force, the town of Dayton and nearby towns and from all branches of service and from all corners of the U.S. and around the world came to run that marathon. It was just a great event. And, yes, I was a guest speaker for the pasta dinner and for the expo. And since I was there, I said, hey, I've already ran this marathon, I think, four times. Let's run it one more time and celebrate their birthday by running it. It was outstanding.
You know, running a marathon for some people is not a big deal. For those of us who don't run at all, it is a very big deal. And I think, again, I congratulate you for participating in that. The unusual part of this, of course, is that you were blind.
I am. I've been blind for the last 11 years. As a matter of fact, on September 2nd,
right,
I just hit my, I call it my alive day. And it's 11 years now.
And you are still on active duty?
No, sir. I just retired. I as we say, I faced out, take a knee, and I'm drinking water now. And believe it, I retired as a major, and always grateful for the support that my command and my peers were there for me and my family. The entire time.
Well, it is a great story, and so I wanted to kind of start it off with, how did you get into the military in the first place?
You know, I come from a family who serves. My brother, uncle, cousins, and my brother served in the Marines, and I just wanted to serve my country. And I always tease my brother. I told him I had to do a step up, so I told him I'd join the Army. And, you know, those are fighting words when you tell that to a Marine or any other branch of service.
That's true.
But as always, to my brother, we always like to tease each other. But at the end of the day, it's all one team, one fight. And join the military and as an enlisted after 4 years of college, University of Puerto Rico, and went to the 101st, was in Rock of Sons, and went to Desert Storm, Desert Shield, and then I moved on to a Pathfinder detachment there in the 101st. Then from there, I moved on to a 5th Corps Lurs in Germany, Darmstadt, Germany. And I had the opportunity to deploy twice to Bosnia and Albania and Kosovo. And from there, I went to Ranger Regiment. I was in 3rd Ranger Battalion at Fort Benning, Georgia, and drill sergeant there at Sand Hill for infantry. And then I came to Special Forces, 7th Special Forces Group. I made it all the way to E7 and put my packet in for OCS, and was very blessed and fortunate that I was selected to go to OCS and got commissioned and went to the 82nd.
Well, you had some, as we know, since you're running marathons still, you're a pretty competitive guy.
Always. And always giving 100%. That's what they teach us, right?
That's very true. And you had some interesting escapades, I guess you could say, as you were making your way through the enlisted ranks and trying to get into schools and, taking care of other people and staying out of trouble and so on and so forth. And so it wasn't an easy task to do all these schools that you went to.
You know, I never turned down an opportunity for any school. There were times that some guys just had no desire to go to school, or they thought it was too tough, or they wasn't sure. And regardless, whatever it was, I decided I'll give it a shot and give it 100%. Even if it was field sanitation, even big in slit trenches back, early on. So, whatever school it was, I guess people, I always say I was in the right place at the right time, I guess, when it was offered.
Well, you worked your way up through the ranks of getting more and more elite units as you continued on with your career, and ended up with the Special Forces, with a Ranger tab. You were a jumper, all those things, correct?
I was, yeah. I went to a lot of skill set schools, and what I always saw is, what can I do to benefit the unit and my team? How can I, get a skill that would benefit the unit and make it mission ready, always. And, and then as a leader, I look to encourage guys to take different, leadership schools as well as technical schools that would improve the readiness of the unit.
I guess I never really thought about it that much because I wasn't in the service long enough. When they offered me the option to get out, I took it. But all of the different schooling and training that you've had has certainly made you more of a complete, not only just a soldier, but it certainly, as it turns out, made you officer material.
I have to say, from the early on, my belief is we are who we are based on our parents at an early age. We know what's right and wrong with yes and no and hot and cold. And, I'm very blessed that my parents, gave me some ethics, values, and morals, which is the foundation. But also I was very blessed to have some great leaders on and guiding me through my career. Still to this day, I stay in contact as I'm retired with a lot of folks who mentored me and gave me the opportunity. So I was very blessed.
I agree with that. I had the privilege of meeting you about a year ago in Detroit when you were in talking about your book, and also you were out there with Bob Gillette and a number of other wounded veterans. It was a softball game, I believe. at the time, and it was really interesting to see how you navigate among regular, I don't want to say regular people, because you're a regular person too.
I am.
It's just to see how everybody really wanted to know more and more about you, because you are such an inspiring presence, and I'm not trying to, you know, gush it up too much, but it was impressive. So I guess we should jump ahead a little bit here. So you get into OCS, which is not an easy task to do as an enlisted person anyway, and you were older than everybody else.
I was older and senior. I think, you know, I had more time in service than my, you know, the commander or the first sergeant of the unit, and I was around the same age as the battalion commander. So it makes you humble, you know. You got to go back and realize your place and what you're striving for, what you're trying to achieve. And I saw it as a great opportunity to assist and be part of a team. And, you know, sometimes when you go to school, you see the cadre or the instructors, you know, on one side and you as a student as the other. And I try to bridge that together. But also, you know, when I went to OCS, we were ready in time of war.
Mm-hmm.
And I had already been to war and mm-hmm. in combat areas. So my focus to these young leaders were you know, being technically and tactically proficient in combat skills, regardless of whatever their occupation skill, their military occupation skill was going to be. You know, at the end of the day, when the enemy has a U.S. soldier in their sights, it's not like, well, I'm finance or
right, yeah, no,
I'm a generator mechanic. No, we're the enemy, and you know, we've got to be a force ready. Every branch of service, and you know, every MOS has to be ready to be an infantryman first. You know, and you know, when we join the Army, we're given a uniform. And we have to qualify a weapon. And when we deploy, we have a weapon in our hands, regardless of where you're at and what branch or
what your occupation. Isn't it the Marines always says, you know, that you're a grunt first?
Yep.
Whatever.
I definitely do love that about the Marines. I got to give them kudos. The Marines are always, they're a Marine first, right? And everybody's is an infantryman first, I think. Yeah.
That's for sure.
It saves lives.
What was the main difference between, or what is the main difference to you between being enlisted and being an officer?
It's sad to say, one of the main differences of enlisted and officer is, unfortunately, is the pay scale.
Well,
you know,
we're all aware of that
say.
One.
I mean, you know, when I became an officer, I am going to tell you straight up, this is no lie. I was called in to my battalion commander's office, and he said, why do you want to become an officer? And I pulled out a pay scale that I had in my pocket, and I said, look at this. And, you know, I was an E7. If I become sergeant major, you know, E9, and look at this pay rank of, you know, captain, can you see a difference? And then I just kept on going, and I said, listen, I'm not doing it for duty, honor, country, because I'm already doing duty, honor, country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to continue to give 100% and serve. I'm doing this for my family. And, it's very hard to go from a senior E7 to become a second lieutenant, and your first assignment is a platoon leader. And have an E7 with you, you know.
Right.
You have to realize that, hey, I have to stay in my lane and let him, you know, develop my platoon sergeant, you know. So I always said, as long as it doesn't affect limb, eyesight, or life, you know, we're going with it. Mm-hmm. So.
I noticed
it was hard. I wasn't going to lie. It was hard not to be a platoon leader and a platoon sergeant at the same time.
Right. I was just going to say you had to hold yourself back, because I know that one of the parts of the book that I really enjoyed, when you arrived in Iraq, you ran off of the plane in front of everybody. And you're supposed to let the other guys do that, I guess, and, you know, kind of hang back just for a moment. But, you know, you always wanted to be first. And that's commendable, that to be that competitive.
Yeah.
But it's always difficult sometimes to control that competitiveness, I guess, would be the term I'm looking for.
It is. It is. You have to realize your place and remember that you're there to lead, you know.
All right, so,
but at the same time, that doesn't mean that I wasn't going to put my gun in a fight, you know.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, you were talking in the book. We're talking with retired major now, Ivan Castro, and his book is Fighting Blind, A Green Beret Story of Extraordinary Courage. We haven't gotten to, well, we're going to talk right now a little bit about extraordinary courage, because you deployed not only to Afghanistan, but you also deployed to Iraq, correct?
I did.
How many times were you in Iraq?
Obviously, I went to Desert Storm, Desert Shield, okay, as a private, and then I went to Iraq, and that's when I got hurt.
Okay.
So my tour of duty in Iraq was cut short.
Yes.
Because I guess the enemy, they wanted to kill us. So they tried killing me, but it didn't happen.
All right.
But they did take the life of several guys in my unit.
Yeah, you on the day you were injured, as you mentioned, September 2nd, 2006. What was the mission that you were on at that time?
We had occupied a compound. It was a Yusufiya, Iraq, and it was a thermal power plant right on the Euphrates River, and it is known as you know, Valley of Death, and they had a lot of foreign fighters and insurgents in that area. And it was believed that they were bringing foreign fighters in and equipping them with vehicles and vests so they could go back into Baghdad and blow themselves up.
Mm-hmm.
So we were looking for these bomb makers and this their lab, you know, where they were building these things, and we did find it. So there was a power plant, and right beside it, there was a container yard. And we had been in several days before, and we lost Thomas Barbieri, just great, true hero, who actually lost his life by jumping in front of his platoon sergeant. And he was awarded posthumously the Silver Star.
Right.
And then we went in. Days later into the power plant, you know, to search that area. This is a huge compound, and as the platoon leader of a sniper and scout platoon, our mission was to provide overwatch and security in, you know, 360 of the compound. So we were up high on elevated structures in order to provide overwatch. And, the day before, mortar rounds came in on one of the corners of the compound, and basically took out almost our entire mortar platoon. It killed one, Sergeant Angel Mercado, and the rest of the mortar platoon was severely injured. And that night, another sniper team from another special operations unit decided they did not want to be in that corner. So they came and relocated where I was at. And I was given the order to take that position, which actually at the time made no sense.
Right.
But I was not going to argue. I took up the position. And I was trying to strategize and plan a way to get out of there as soon as possible, and right as daylight broke, I jumped on a rooftop, told my men to pack their bags, we're going to move, and my soldiers, you know, my snipers and scouts, mm-hmm. They were getting off the rooftop, and I jumped on the rooftop, and I was scouting for a different position where I could put my weapons at. And right when I looked at it, I was thinking about the key words to say to my battalion commander. You know, your radio transmission has got to be short, you know, sweet and to the point. I was looking for the key words I was going to use to tell my battalion commander that we were going to move. And we were going to move for several reasons. The location that we were placed in just did not provide at that time cover.
Right.
Did not provide much concealment. And we were wide open to the element. And you can imagine that. Yeah. You know, September in Iraq, so it's pretty hot. And, you know, also, you have to realize that when you're using sniper weapons, looking through a scope at that time of day and everything, you have a lot of mirage coming up through your scope.
Oh, true. You know? I hadn't thought of that, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, you could only shoot as far as you could identify and be able to engage the target, you know. And identify the target. And so as I was formulating, I had the words in my mouth and I just picked up the hand mic. I was on a knee, picked up the hand mic, brought it up to my ear. And right when I went to push the talk, you know, button, mm-hmm. First round landed off the rooftop right beside the building. And immediately I let go of the push to talk and, someone came, where did that land? And then, you know, the next thing I did was I looked over my left shoulder to tell my, there were other guys from my unit,
mm-hmm.
you know, from my battalion on the rooftop, from Alpha Company. And right as I went and looked over my left shoulder, I was screaming to tell them, you know, yelling, get off the rooftop, jump off. The next round landed. 5 feet to my left.
And that's all you remember for a long time.
That's all I remember. Obviously, you know, I was in, what I do remember was fighting for my life. I remember, like, mm-hmm. just fighting, trying to get back.
In the book, you describe it as you felt like you were in a bog or in mud or something like that, and you were trying to pull yourself out of it, even though you were unconscious for, I don't even know how long, but you just were trying to keep yourself alive until you could figure out what was going to happen next.
Yeah, I was. You know, and it's been 11 years, and just this last September, I finally got to talk to one of the guys that died on the rooftop, Ralph mm-hmm. Porras, Sergeant Ralph Porras. Ralph was one of my soldiers when I was the platoon leader of, in Delta Company, you know, the tow platoon, the anti-tank platoon. So I just spoke with Ralph's aunt, sister, and mom this last September 2nd.
Wow.
And that was pretty hard for me and for them. You know, I haven't spoken to this family, you know, in 11 years.
It's difficult to do those things.
As you know, still to this day, anybody who was on that mission or on that corner in or on the rooftop, I come across them. I try to continue the piecemeal of that day and the actions that happened afterwards. And just recently, one of my soldiers said that, you know, obviously my guys jumped on the rooftop immediately, back on it. You know, we were still under attack. And immediately, one of my guys, Rafael Ortiz was his name, Rafael Ortiz. He immediately was yelling, where's Lieutenant Castro?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Sergeant Octavary, who was the platoon sergeant, said, that's him. He's right there at your feet. And he couldn't recognize me. He said he looked at my face, and it was nothing but mm-hmm. blood, you know, and he couldn't recognize my face. I had my helmet on, But he had a really look at my body armor, which had my last name on it. And, you know, believe it or not, I still have the shell to that body armor at my home.
I think it's an amazing story, Ivan. And we've only got about 3 minutes before we run out of time today. I encourage people to buy this book. I know that it's coming out in paperback pretty soon. It's called Fighting Blind, A Green Beret Story of Extraordinary Courage by Ivan Castro and Jim DeVlees.
And
we're not even going to get into the recovery part of it, which is unfortunately bad timing on my part. But what I'd like to invite you back, if we could.
Absolutely. It would be an honor to be back. Yes, sir.
I think it's just it's such a great story, and you've got a lot of words in here. We'll save the hospital half of the book for the next time, but you follow a lot of quotes in your life, and you've got a lot of sayings that kind of keep you keep you going.
And absolutely. I've got several back there, yeah, in the book. You know, I believe the book is not only for those who served, but for everyone. You'll find yourself in the book, whether you're a mother, a father, brother, sister, and you'll see, you know, the book is also recognizes the sacrifices mm-hmm. of men and women in uniform and their families, and just how diverse our military is all around the world.
Well, you seem to be, you know, recovered as much as possible. You know you have a great family, it sounds like, and I'm really proud to have had the opportunity to have you on our program.
Thank you, Bill, and I look forward to coming back.
We will do that. Thank you very much again, and why don't you go home and get some rest? You've had a long day.
Yes, sir. God bless.
Thank you very much. Thank you. All right. Well, we were talking to Ivan Castro. This is really a great story, folks. I encourage you to go out and read this book, Fighting Blind. It doesn't make any difference, really, if you're a veteran or not, or if you've been in the military. I think this is the kind of book for anybody who's had some sort of traumatic injury to read, and because he talks about many, many of the issues that he and his family faced as he was trying to recover. And I think that's what's so important. That's the story of the human spirit in there. And so that'll do it for this week on Veterans Radio. Next week, that reminds me. Next week, we're going to be talking about the VA again. So if you have any questions about benefits or anything along those lines, make sure you tune in. And until then, you are dismissed.